Today is today and I'm awake. Today is like yesterday. With a little work I think I can make a day that is not the same. 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3. Today is today and I'm awake. Today is like yesterday. With a little work I think I can make a day that is not the same. Let my thoughts run wild, with my words I trace a path to a secret place. Step along the road where the music flows and the sun and the songbirds pray. Wash over me, wash over me. It don't matter if I don't know the way. Wash over me, wash over me. It don't matter if I'm late or if I stay. The same place. Wash over me, wash over me. Don't matter if I don't know the way. Wash over me, wash over me. Don't matter if I go or if I stay. Today is today and I'm awake. Today is like yesterday. With a little work I think I can make a day that is not the same.
That was a song called I'm Awake by Lynn Jackson. Lynn just happens to be my very special guest today. My name is Stuart McKee and this is Musicians FAQ. My guest this week is a dynamo on the local scene. She's loved and respected by her peers and by her fans. She's been writing, recording, and performing for nearly 20 years, and she's prolific as hell. She's also a very talented painter whose artwork graces and colors the new album beautifully. Her 12th release, which just came out this March, does not disappoint. It's a dynamic collection of sounds and stories brought to life by the carefully chosen instrumentation and astute production. I Am Only the Moon is fierce and tender, searching and powerful, as she once again draws us into her world and characters with endearing narratives and strong melodies, and a lot of heart. She's got a beautiful and haunting voice, and she is my guest this week on Musicians FAQ. All right, so joining me on Musicians FAQ this week is Lynn Jackson. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stuart. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. I've been looking forward to chatting with you. Been following you a little bit with Facebook and all the socials, as kind of our whole world is built around that these days. Realizing that you're doing more than music, you're doing painting as well.
That's something I just picked up over the last 2 years during the pandemic. It was just something I'd try out. My grandmother on my mother's side was an oil painter, landscape painter, and really good, actually, I thought. So, but I never thought of trying it until a couple of years ago. And I thought, well, I've got some time to spare. I'll just give it a whirl. And I found it really relaxing and meditative, and very different from performing, but it's a cool way to express yourself, and it's a totally different animal from live music. So I'm glad I discovered it. It's just so relaxing.
Nice. Yeah, I certainly are some famous musical artists like John Mellencamp and Ronnie Wood and, you know, I'm sure there's many. Joni Mitchell, that's right. Yeah. So, I think it kind of goes with it. I mean, especially if you remember the days of, you know, album covers and things like that before CDs and before online streaming, when, you know, that cover art.
See,
Yeah.
There are still CD shoppers. I still like to have the physical product in my hand.
Me too. Me too.
And I, you know, like I, that's kind of why I still make like physical copies. This package, this I Am Only the Moon package that I'm holding up, it features a few of my paintings on the front, back, and the inside. And nice. Plus, I've always been a person to not only look at the artwork, but I immediately open it up and look at all the liner notes and who wrote the songs and who played on what. And I've always been kind of a music geek that way. I have to know these things.
Yeah, me too. That's come up with a few interviews that I've done in the past. I was definitely that guy connecting the dots. And, you know, I mean, I remember picking up like an old Jeff Beck album years ago at the record store. And I'm like, oh my God, Ronnie Wood's on here and Rod Stewart's on here. And wow, this was produced by this guy. And yeah, it's crazy how you, and it's funny because I mean, Spotify and a lot of the algorithms, a lot of the online stuff is kind of built that way where it pulls things in and it kind of brings, you know, if you're into this, you might be into this, and it connects this person with that person. And as much as I read all those liner notes and all the magazines and watched as many shows as I could watch, there's still surprises from me where I go, oh, well, you know, there's a bass player for Robin Trower's band. And
yeah,
I had no idea that he'd been in this other band way back in the 60s. And I said, oh, that's where this guy came from. Because you figure everybody's come from somewhere. There's very few people that just kind of play in one band and then that's it.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, being 47, I still am of, I guess, that age group that likes the tactile, like having something in my hand that I can look at and investigate. And it sometimes leads me to other records and other albums by artists.
Yeah, no, and I noticed that with your album, I was going to ask, I thought there was some of your art that was involved, because I think, you know, there's you and there's, I think her name is Bridget Melody. I hope I got that right. I've seen her online a lot as well, and I actually talked to her about maybe using some of her paintings for an album cover, and I did that with a friend of mine that I know in England, and I used to work with, and she lived here in Canada years ago, and she had started painting a couple of years ago, mostly outdoor stuff, and we end up falling in love with one of the pictures that she did, and we end up using it for an album cover, that song I did with CJ Cooper. So it's cool. So, you know, yeah, I've been keeping an eye on your stuff, looking for something that might inspire me. I might buy a print from you and say, hey, that could be a great album cover for my next single or something. But I guess that's kind of what we have to do these days. I mean, there's so many restrictions on live performance and so many restrictions on earning money with streaming that you've really got to diversify and just kind of do everything and anything you can to kind of stay in the creative world, but try to make some money as well.
It definitely has been challenging for a lot of people over the past couple of years. I have been lucky to find work again after being out of work, as I said, for 5 years. I work as a copy editor for the news. I worked at the Record for 12 years until they amalgamated their staff with another sister paper.
Right.
So that left a good chunk of us in our 40s and 50s kind of, well, we're kind of kicked to the curb. Yeah, I don't want to sound bitter about it, but I've always known, I've always had to have another job as well as doing my music. And I really love working in the journalism field. That is another love of mine. So I don't consider it, necessarily a negative. It just means a lot of your time is taken up between doing the two things, the working job and then the more passionate job that doesn't always pay as well.
Yeah. Well, no, and I can relate. I mean, and doing this radio show has been a passion project of mine for sure. I mean, as somebody who's, you know, trying to establish himself in the music industry, but also somebody who's just a big fan of musicians, and especially local musicians, people that I've known and followed for years, and I want to be able to support in any way that I can. But I mean, and certainly journalism on your end ties in, I mean, in terms of reviews and interviews and bios and so many things. So I mean,
yeah, but actually let me say it is difficult because most reputable papers and publications have very strict conflict of interest clause. So it was actually more difficult with me working for a newspaper to be able to get coverage for this. I mean, I started playing music more than 20 years ago. I put out my first album in 2004, and I started working for the record in September 2002. So, it became more difficult for my particular circumstance. I did manage to get some coverage now and then.
Oh, that's good. From
the local paper there's press and reviews around the world and internationally and across Canada. Those have come through and they're all up on my website.
Awesome. Yeah. It's funny. I think much like what you're talking about with having the CD in your hand or the record and reading the liner notes and that tangible product, is the same with newspapers. Like, I still miss newspapers and magazines. I mean, I still subscribe to Living Blues and Rolling Stone and American Songwriter, and I get the actual hard copy. So they give you,
I agree.
You know, they give you a choice when you get the subscription. Do you just want the digital copy or do you want both? And I get the hard copy because the digital usually comes with it anyways.
I don't want to spend my entire life sitting in front of my computer screen. No. So I actually read books still.
And when
I want a new book, if it's only available in the digital copy, I will get it. But as a last resort, our house is filled with CDs and bookshelves all over the place. So we're both fans of getting our information that way.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. And I used to love to read multiple newspapers a day. I mean, for me, it was great if we were traveling, especially in the States or something in a big city, and there'd be, you know, newspapers from all over the world that they'd have in the lobby that, you know, I'd sit there for hours just reading, you know, London Press or New York Times or whatever, Toronto Star. But and it's funny, my sister, what's that?
Newspapers are great.
Oh, they are.
When I went to college, we still did pay step.
Wow.
In the late 90s, we did pay step, or, you know, we were learning computer programs, but in the late 90s, I think I was one of the last classes to still learn pay step. If you don't know what that is, look it up.
It's funny, when we stopped getting the paper delivered, but my sister had just texted me about an old family friend who passed away at 101. I thought, oh my God, I thought she died years ago. But, you know, I was thrilled to see that they made it that far. But I said, she was talking about reading the obituaries in the record. I said, wow, are you still getting the paper? She goes, yeah, every Saturday. I say,
a lot of people read their obituaries.
Yeah, I get it. Well, I think that's one of the sad conditions as we get older, we become our parents.
It is kind of sad, but I think it's a way of people to keep track of
what's
going on as they get older.
Yeah. Well, we're seeing a lot of those posted daily with the rock stars and comedians and actors. You know, we're close in age. I've got 10 years on you, but I mean, you know, we probably have a lot of similar touchstones in terms of the musicians and the actors and the comedians of the day. And it's amazing. Like, it's just a nonstop, you know, the last bunch of years have been horrible as far as losing all these legends.
It has been a lot.
You know, I'm going to wake up one day and not recognize anybody.
Concrete box. I worked in a field in the sun. Worked for hours all alone. Didn't talk to no one. I got up with the buzzer. Myself ahead. Didn't quite fill the coffers, but I discovered this instead. We're all born passionate people. The daily grind could trap us down. When your heart tells you it wants to fly, you better heed the sound. the things I put it through. And not one day will I regret following where my spirit moves. We're all born passionate people. Daily grind can trap us down. When your heart tells you it wants to fly, better heed the sound.
That was a song called The Working Life from Lynn Jackson's brand new album, I Am Only the Moon.
So we kind of tore into this, which is great because I find it fascinating, all the different things that you're doing, and you do them all well. But I wanted to maybe take it back for a second. Just always kind of like to, with this show, go back to the very beginning, sort of the basic stuff, you know, where were you born and what was your childhood like and what led you to music or to a creative life?
Okay, well, I was born in Stratford, Ontario, just down the road, in to a single mother. He was 17 years old. And I'd say based on that, my childhood had a lot of struggles and a lot of upheaval. And it was around the time I was in about 12 years old that my mother remarried. And I should say I was born in the Stratford area, but then we relocated to the Ingersoll area where I spent most of my public school years. And then, and I was in school orchestra there. They had stringed instruments. I played violin, which I loved. Yeah. And then my mother remarried and we moved to Lucknow, which I don't know if you know where that is. It's
sure
about a 15 minute drive in from Lake Huron.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you go, if you drive from Kitchener past Listowel, keep going. I went to Wingham High School.
Wow.
Lucknow only is a town of only 1,000 people. So, you know, there wasn't a lot to do unless you had your license and could drive out of town. Yeah. And the music, the instrumentation at the Wingham High School was brass. So I ended up playing trombone. Wasn't my first pick. I was really aiming for sax, but I just drew the short straw, I guess. And trombone wasn't bad. I could learn bass clef, whereas with the violin, I had learned treble clef. So it was a different learning experience. And I spent time in school band and jazz combo. And then briefly there was a choir and I ended up performing violin with the choir, but I feel like I'm going all over the place and giving lots of information. But yeah, does that answer?
Well, that's kind of neat. I mean, because so it sounds like the music was there, like right at the beginning, with band and the violin, and so I mean, I had played saxophone in school band, but I was terrible. I never really took to it, and I wish I had. And it's one of those instruments that I want to get back to eventually. And it's funny, as you're talking about Wingham and Lucknow, I mean, I toured with Major Hoople's Boarding House for years as a roadie back in the 80s. So we played all those small towns and played up in that area a lot. And my good friend Grant Haywood is actually from Wingham as well. And his dad, Earl Haywood, and that whole family. And I think Kevin Westfall, a friend of ours, wrote a song called Lucknow. which he's got out somewhere. He does a lot of kind of fun novelty songs and small town kind of stuff. And
I should also say, as a kid, I really loved to sing. My mother had a small record collection, but she really liked, you know, bands from the 70s, like Cat Stevens and Dr. Hook and the Commodores. And I think we eventually had some, I think a neighbor came over and left a bunch of records one day. So we also had some Simon and Garfunkel, Mamas and the Papas, who I love, early Rolling Stones, and Linda Ronstadt. I loved Linda Ronstadt. And then later on, my parents listened to a lot of old country. So I grew up with all those influences, and from a really young age, I really loved to sing. Yeah. I really loved to sing, and I kind of do that when my parents were out of the house. I'd put on some records on an actual record player and sing along with, you know, Dolly Parton or Linda Ronstadt or Simon Garfunkel.
That's awesome. Well,
until I heard the door creak open and my parents were back, and I would just like quiet as a mouse run up to my room. So.
Well, I mean, you're lucky that your parents had such a great collection of music. I mean, that sounds more like the collection of music that my older brother and sister had and their friends. And then I eventually kind of got into a lot of that music as well. My parents were more into the big band stuff. I mean, we did have some common ground on Johnny Cash, and they liked some of the Beatles and some of Elvis Presley. And so we'd kind of meet in the middle ground there, but they weren't big on the 60s, 70s singer songwriter or rock bands or any of that kind of stuff. But
mother's only 17 years older than
I am. That's right. So. Yeah. So my parents are 33 years older. And was your mother musical as well? Did she sing or play? Or?
No, she wasn't. She's always said her best courses when she was in school was phys ed and art. But she obviously dropped out of school after grade 9 to have a baby. So,
yeah. Well, obviously she's passed down some of the art genes to you. So that's exciting. And the music stuff, you know, what about anybody else, other friends and family members or people around when you're growing up that played?
Like I was saying, the only person that really showed any artistic interest or merit was my grandmother, my mother's mother, who was a painter. I don't have any siblings, and I'm not in close contact with much of the extended family. And I don't know too much about my father's side of the family.
So the music, then you kind of found that on your own. I mean, playing in the school band and listening to records and
listening to CKNX radio and
Wingham. Yeah, nice. and what about, you know, playing guitar and getting sort of more into being a singer songwriter?
I didn't actually pick up a guitar until an uncle gave me a guitar. An uncle on my biological father's side gave me a guitar shortly after his funeral in 1994, when I was in my first year of university. It was kind of an odd gift. I didn't know him very well, but I appreciated it until I tried to play it. The action was so high. The strings were so high off the fretboard. It was a smaller pan guitar, I believe. And it was, I don't know if they're a cheaper guitar, but it was definitely not easy to play. But that was the first guitar I ever had. And I was determined to try to figure out how to play some chords. So by this point, I had been through university and college and had lots of OSAP loans that I breathing down my neck. And that's when I first picked up a guitar, and I eventually saved up enough money from my job to pick up something that was a little easier to play. And I kept going. In high school, I was writing lyrics and poetry. And once I started to play guitar, I could see that I would be at one point blending them together, the music and the words. So.
Cool. That's actually going to be my next question. Is going to, like, when did the writing start? And I think with a lot of people, it does start with the lyrics or poetry or things like that.
I've actually heard the opposite, other than Leonard Cohen. I've heard a lot of people start with the music and then work the lyrics in, but I actually start with the lyrics and work the music in. That's what I have heard anyway.
Yeah, I can't remember with me. I remember writing a song when I was a kid, and I didn't play any instruments, and I just wrote out the lyrics. But I think when I got into songwriting, it was picking up the guitar. I mean, and there's equally a lot of people I know, but I think on this, a lot of people that I've interviewed on this show, and it seems to be split kind of by gender, oddly enough, where a majority of the female people that I've interviewed on this show, a lot of them did start with singing and lyrics, and a lot of the guys started with guitar playing, and kind of some of them, you know, didn't even intend to get into songwriting. It happened kind of by accident or grudgingly. I mean, for me, I started picking up the guitar and kind of playing chords and playing riffs and kind of trying to hum along to it and come up with some melodies and lyrics.
Well, I do remember when I was starting to meld those two things together, I started to go to my first open mics in the city in Kitchener, probably around 1998, 1999. And I noticed at that time, there weren't a lot of girls who played instruments on stage or played guitar. There was one other girl that went to play guitar and sang, and most of the other women that came, they would sing, but they would have a boy accompanying them on guitar. And I thought, and right away something clicked, and I thought, if I want to play my own music the way I want it to sound, I better get into this guitar thing. And I mean, some people play piano, but I didn't have access to a piano. And having come from playing violin for a few years, I was really into stringed instruments. So I just picked up the guitar. It's a totally different instrument, but I saw it as a vehicle to express my own thoughts and my own sounds in my own way.
Now I'm warming up.
just beautiful. I was carried away. That is Old Familiar Song by Lynn Jackson from her fabulous new album, I Am Only the Moon.
Well, and it's funny, as we were talking earlier about Joni Mitchell, I mean, I remember seeing a clip of her on the Bob Dylan Rolling Thunder review, and it really, that's kind of what it was. It was all the boys sitting around at Gordon Lightfoot's house, and they're all guitar players, and then she sits down and she starts playing this open tuning, and you know, she's playing circles around these guys. I mean, they're all singing and well, and they're all writing good songs, but I mean, most of them are just kind of strumming and doing your general finger picking, and then she's doing all this kind of crazy stuff, and they're just sitting there with their jaws dropped. But she was an oddball. I mean, bands like Heart certainly had to deal with a lot of chauvinism and discrimination. That song Barracuda is about, you know, some nasty record executive guy who,
great,
you
know, song.
Yeah. So it's, but it's funny what you're saying. Cause I saw that growing up too. And then when I was at the Boathouse a few years ago, I was starting to see more female singer songwriters with the guitar and with the ukulele. And that seems to be really taking off fantastic on social media. Yeah.
It's definitely different now than when I started playing in the late 90s
for sure.
Things have, it seems like thing, I don't want to give a blanket generalization, but it does seem like more women are playing their own stuff, and I think that's really important.
I think so too. A lot of guitar female shredders out there too, these guitar players just wailing on the guitar. it is high time for sure. So do you remember, do you still play or have some of the first songs, or was it just kind of a work in progress for years before you started?
They went on my first album, which Night Songs, which came out in April 2004.
Nice.
The first song I ever wrote is the last song on that album. I don't have any more physical copies left because it's been 18 years. I have one copy that Busted Flat happened to find in Florida and thought it would be funny to buy it. So it just arrived the other day. Wow. I don't know how it ended up in Florida, but I have one copy of my original album and I plan to keep it.
That's cool. So, that's cool.
But yeah, a lot of my originals, my very first foray into songwriting, it's all on that record.
Right.
16 songs on my first record.
That's amazing. Is there like an artist or a first song or something that really inspired you to say, I mean, you were going out to these open mics and things and seeing people, but there's just somebody specifically in particular or a couple of people that really said, I want to do that. I want to do what she's doing, or I want to do what he's doing, or.
I wouldn't say there was anything specifically. Like I said, when I was a teenager, that was the stuff I was listening to because I was living in a small town and I didn't have access to a record store. And, you know, it was the 80s and 90s. So it wasn't like I was going online to get stuff. I was listening to the radio, listening to my parents' records collection and, you know, going to the local department store and picking up cassettes. Later on, I would say my influences, like in the late 90s, I started to discover artists like Elvis Costello and later on Lucinda Williams, who are two of my favorites. I still love lots of old country music that I grew up with when I was young. But also going to the local open mics, there was a bit of a community there. Actually, there was another woman, an older woman, who came out and played guitar as well. But at the various open mics around the city in the late 90s, the community, it was kind of a loose-knit community of men and women who were coming out, and they were very supportive. So I just felt confident enough in that group to start getting up on stage, get my stage legs, so to speak, and then the bar owner at one of the open mics was the first person to offer me a gig. And that was 1999, I think.
Very cool. So, and how did you get hooked up with Busted Flat Records?
I had put out my first album in April 2004. And in the summertime, Mark Logan, who runs Busted Flat Records, he also owns and operates Encore Records, the record store in downtown Kitchener.
My favorite.
So part. I just wanted to sell some copies. So I took the Encore. I took them a 6 copies, 5 to sell and 1 play copy. And I saw him put it on a stack of CDs high on a shelf. And I was like, okay, then. And people were dropping stuff off all the time for them to sell on consignment. And they don't take a cut. It's a great place to sell your stuff. But it wasn't until about 6 months later that he sought me out while I was out actually at a Paul McLeod show and said, I finally listened to your record and I really liked it. And you wanted to help me put out my next record.
That's so awesome.
That's how that happened. So that happened actually. Was that that might have been the night of the big tsunami.
Oh no.
Yeah, I was, I think it was in late 2004.
Yeah.
So he approached me about putting up, and at that time, the only person on his label was Shannon Lyon.
Okay.
He had started the label for to put out Shannon's music.
Ah, okay. Makes sense. Yeah, some great names: Shannon, Paul McLeod. Miss that guy. So, do you co-produce, or do you have him, or do you have a producer for your records, or is it?
Mark doesn't produce anything. No. He simply, as the label, he has nothing to do with the studio. He can help pay for costs. It depends on what your deal is with him or your situation, but he doesn't do your bookings and he doesn't have any say in producing your album. So I have produced or co-produced all of my albums except for one in 2017, which was produced by Michael Timmins of the Cowboy Junkies. And I specifically wanted to get out of the chair and see what happened with a different producer at the reins.
Nice. So. And how did that connection come about?
Mark actually just emailed him. Mark Logan just contacted him, and the Cowboy Junkies were playing the Blues Fest that summer on the 10th stage in the park. So we went and met him briefly right after their set, and we had a chat. And I had sent him, Mark had sent him some of my earlier CDs, and yeah, we had a brief chat, and the terms were agreed to, and we went from there.
That's very cool. That's awesome. Yeah, it seems like he'd be a good fit for you as well. So how many albums now to date have you had out?
I have 12.
I was going to say, you've been prolific.
I have 12, including a side project that I have from a couple years ago called Shipwreck Radios, which is more alternative rock.
Okay.
But I wrote all the songs on that too, and I put the band together and I produced that as well. So that's included in the 12 albums. That came out in 2017.
That's incredible.
Or 2018, actually.
Now, do you normally play on your own, or you play with a band, or does it depend on the venue or the
music? It depends on what's required at the venue. It depends on the setting. It depends on the pay. It depends if I can afford a band. A lot of times when I had solo across Canada, it made more sense to go on my own. Or I would take another busted flat artist, but I would generally do all of the booking, all the routing, all the cold calling, a lot of the press, pretty much a Jill of all trades when it comes to touring Canada and getting all your ducks in a row.
Nice. Good for you. That's awesome. So what about upcoming projects and that the,
I just put out an album. Yeah,
I was gonna say that one just came out, right?
I just put it out at the end of March.
So it's really just kind of working that one for the next
little while. And previously I put out Lionheart in May of 2020.
Okay.
And there was supposed to be a big show at the Starlight, which of course got canceled due to the pandemic. And now the Starlight is closed, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah, we went to see
there really aren't any. I was trying to think of a place I might do a show But we've lost a couple of venues, and I have about 8 different people that play on this, and not everybody is comfortable yet getting together to practice the songs in a group setting. So honestly, I've decided just to brainstorm more about it. I did decide to make a video for the title track, I Am Only the Moon. It features myself and Rob Damon. I released that the same day as the record. I wanted it to be more of an event because there wasn't going to be a show immediately.
Right.
And it was just a way to reach people and say, hey, look, I have a new album. This is the title track, and try to get people's attention with all the stuff that's going on in social media these days. And yeah.
Yeah, it's thick with competition for sure. It's interesting. I went to see Rock This Town on the weekend, the movie at the Princess Theater about the history of live music. And
right.
They made a point of that at the end of, you know, the different music venues that have closed down, you know, some of it pre-pandemic, with the Boathouse, which you have been actively involved with, memories of the Boathouse and posting those kind of things. And
I played there many times. I had probably had about 4 CD releases there. I had 2 at the Jane Bond. Busted Flat had the last Saturday of every month. So Busted Flat artists would play on the last Saturday of every month at the Boathouse.
Right.
So it was a regular standing gig for the label. So various people on the label would team up and like co-bill, I guess, like right. 2 or 3 people on a bill.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's the way they used to do it back in the early days of rock and roll. You have all these different artists on a bus and on tour together, and whether they were all label mates or what it was, but you know, they come out and play a couple of songs, and the next one come out and play a couple of songs. And I love those kind of shows. I think it's a really good way to showcase and, you know, a little bit of something for everybody, I think. And
right,
you might come out for a specific artist, and then you see somebody else and go, wow, she's really
absolutely great. That was the plan. That was the plan of it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Any word on the Boathouse? I know there was a movement by, I think, Pete Temple and different people to try to get it going again, but
there was just an article by Terry Pender, who just did a story on my new album, but people can look that up. I didn't read it completely in depthly, but I think basically the land is owned by the city. The building is owned by the city. So to have an operator come in, but still have the city have that much power into what happens there, I think that is a bit of an issue for potential owners that want to come in and do things their way. I really need to go back and read the article.
Yeah.
But I think, and I think it needs a significant investment. I really have to go back and read up on it again. It's been so long since I've looked into that stuff. But I think that's the crux of the difficulty. But again, Terry Pender just did a story in the record, like the same week that my album came out. So the end of March, 3rd week of March.
I know. I mean, previous owners that I'd worked with and before, I mean, everybody sunk a ton of money into that place. And there seems to be a lot of restrictions on what you can do and very little support about what you need to get it done. And, you know, whether it's marketing or advertising or parking, accessibility would be a really good thing for that venue.
And also don't forget that, you know, there are a group of people who definitely want it to be a live music venue again.
Yeah.
And then there are a group in the neighborhood
who don't
like the noise.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there are a lot of different factors that anybody who was going to take it over and try again is kind of up against.
Yeah, the music and the sound definitely echoes across that lake at night. So, I mean, I'm certainly empathetic with the neighbors to a point, but, you know, screw them. Live music, more live music.
Watching you, watch yourself, worked up in your soul now. Glory behind your eyes and in front, there is no mystery in this sound. Young limbs flailing, bodies dancing, not quite in time. Raspy words escape into the stale air, lyrics to a worn-out song. Yeah, people singing along. In the moments, I keep watching the moments get lost in you. The longing for truth is a neat and tidy, nicely wrapped up. Endless finales, they never come, they never please, left open for the whole world to see.
Another killer track from Lynn Jackson's new album, I Am Only the Moon. That's a song called Superstar.
So with the songwriting, and I haven't really kind of checked the credits on the back of your CDs and things, but do you write everything on your own? Do you sometimes co-write, or do you have a preferred method of songwriting?
I actually, this might sound kind of funny, but I don't understand how people co-write. I mean, I did co-write a song with Paul McLeod years ago. It's on my album Coming Down from 2010. But I can't write a song unless I'm in the right frame of mind to write a song. Right. I can't schedule a time to get together with somebody and write a song. It has never worked that way for me. I'm usually practicing in whatever rehearsal space I have. I could be practicing, you know, pub cover songs. I play those gigs as well. And that, you know, I play about 200 pub cover songs. So those take some maintenance.
For sure.
So I am regularly, or for a time, for a long time, I was regularly practicing for those kinds of shows as well as the original shows. So I don't really set out to write a song in a night or whatever. I'm with my guitar, I'm hanging out, or I'm listening to music. I listen to a wide variety of stuff. From kind of folky songwriting to rootsy to Lucinda Williams or Elvis Costello, Cat Power, or grunge. I really like grunge and punk and hard rock. So I will be listening to all of these things, and sometimes something will click in my brain and I will have an inspiration or an idea, and then I will try it out. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But this is also going to be a funny thing to say. Most of the time, if it's working out, I get on a roll and I finish the song in one night. Mm-hmm. I'd say about 90% of the songs that I've written over 12 albums, they have come together in one night. Yeah. And then I use GarageBand. I get down a rough version of the song before I forget it. And get the lyrics written out or typed out. And that's how it works for me. I know that definitely is not how it works for a lot of other people. there have been songs that I could see the potential in and I've had to come back to over time. Yeah. There is one on this album that I started to write 10 years ago. No Direction Home. It's kind of a piano ballad. I heard it as a soul song, and I only had the first section 10 years ago. And I kept going back to it over the years, and I kept blanking out on it until finally, a couple years ago, the rest of it just came flowing out.
Right.
So that's one example of something that took some time to write. But nothing is forced. It just happens. And I'm never under the gun I need to put out a record. I need to get a batch of songs together. Because I pay for everything myself or with help from the label. It gives me the freedom to make music the way I want to make it and more naturally. And it just happens that when I get a collection of songs together, that's when I put out an album. And it just happens to be every year or 2 years that I have enough songs in a collection that I put together. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, there's a song that I leave off because it doesn't fit the vibe of what I'm doing. And again, on this album, there's a song called Green Eyes that's a kind of a soul song. And it's been kicking around since 2012. And I finally found a place for it. So
awesome.
Does that answer? That was a really long answer.
That was a good answer. And I mean, because there are a lot of people who have kind of a specific way to write, and there are kind of like those co-write thing. Yeah, I can't do the scheduled co-writes. I've tried that a few times. When I do co-write, and it's only with a sort of a small group of people that I really click with, a lot of it is like, hey, we bring a couple of ideas, and it's like, you know, I'll help you finish that idea, or you help me finish this idea, because I know it's kind of, it'll be something that they'll bring something good to, or they know it's something that I'll bring something good to. But yeah, I write mainly on my own, and I'm the same way. If I have the time, I like to finish the song. If I'm inspired by something, I like to follow through. I do have a lot of unfinished pieces because ideas will come to me randomly in the middle of the night and I'll go back to sleep, or because I got to go off to work, or because something else is coming up. I mean, if I got an idea before the show here, then I just put on my voice notes on my phone and then try to get back to it. My problem is I have hundreds and hundreds of these voice notes and it's trying to keep up with them. And but yeah, I do have a lot of songs that just get written, they just come out and they're complete. Yeah. And then that's,
I probably have about 50 on my old laptop that are partial songs.
Yeah.
And I keep them around just in case. And like that happened with the one song, the piano bell that I was telling you about. I'm glad I kept that around because I really thought it was going to be something special, and I'm pleased with how it turned out after 10 years.
When the night has got you in a mood that's got its grip around you, you feel like you got no more. All you got is so, so slow. Sometimes there's no direction home.
That's it for part one of my interview with Lynn Jackson. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be here again next week with part two of my interview with Lynn Jackson and some additional songs from her new album, including the title track, I Am Only the Moon. Thanks again for listening to Musicians FAQ. We're here every Monday at 10 a.m. Have a great week.
You've got to love yourself before you love.